Hello and welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
For those of you on Taylor Swift concert watch, I just want you to know, and you'll know why this is significant. Do you know what today is?
It's
13 days until I see Taylor Swift.
Oh, okay. And 13.
That's it.
It's like a thing.
She likes that number.
Yeah. Like, as we all know
right.
and understand, 13 is a thing.
You all know this by now.
By now, yes.
Yeah.
Do you know, there was a clue in the New York Times crossword puzzle day before yesterday that Justin and I were sitting there trying to figure out, and it was a song with lyric, "Don't mess with the bear," or something, her claws, something about her claws, or you'll get her claws.
And you'll poke that bear till the claws come out.
Yes.
Yeah. That's Taylor Swift.
Yes.
It's Mad Woman.
Yeah, well, we didn't know that. We had to fill in most of it before. I was like, it looks like they're trying to say Mad Woman. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
That's it.
But we really had to fill in almost every clue around it.
That's one of those clues I would have gotten right off the bat. Those are rare, but would have been one of those.
There are a number of joke clues in the New York Times crossword puzzle. And you know it's a joke because the clue ends with a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their way of saying, this is a clever little joke for you. This is a clever little joke, perhaps a pun.
I like the ones that are trying to get you to put down a sound or like an expression of sorts, like a sigh or a groan. Mm-hmm. And they do that by giving you brackets and then putting like words inside. And it's like, basically what you must be thinking if you're groaning or you're sighing or you're whatever, like, oh man, can't believe I lost, or something like that. And then they put it in brackets and it's like, oh, this is supposed to be like internal monologue when you're expressing something. Took me a while to understand that. I don't really know what the sometimes they hit, sometimes I don't know what they're doing there.
The introduction, they have rebus answers now. Mm-hmm. Where you actually have to put two letters in a box or even a word in a box. That is not, I'm not okay with that.
There was one that,
Taylor's looking at us like we're the two most boring people who have ever.
No, I'm just real. I have never in my life interacted with the crossword.
I didn't used to. And then when I started school, they gave us a free New York Times account. And it comes with, most of the ones that schools give you are just like for the news, but it comes with the game. So I was using it for Wordle every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vertex, because Vertex is fun. But then I realized you could get the crossword on your phone. I was like, you know, maybe this is like a fun way to just try to see how much I know. And now I can't stop doing it every day. And I realized how little I know about the world.
See, I feel like I encounter multiple challenges in my daily life that remind me how little I know, that I don't need to seek them out in an organized manner.
But this is, okay, this is what I will tell you about it. Justin and I have gotten in the habit of trying to do it every day. Justin really, he finishes it one way or the other, whether I help or not, because he's on a streak and now this matters. You know how that it starts to, now this matters. So it's a big deal to him. He's got to do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
There is knowledge that people just must have and answer these questions quickly. Like there's geography stuff that I'm like, yeah, never going to know that. Mm-mm, no. Or like a specific author or something. And it's like, if you just don't know that book or whatever.
Or that song.
Like or that song. Yeah, Swift, you're never going to guess this. You know, you're not going to guess the name of someone. But then there's also like, there's vocabulary stuff. And I'm like, well, I can come in strong with some vocabulary. Like I know some weird words. I know some weird words sometimes. And then the other thing about it is like, they like certain words over and over
again.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that saves me, is there are a couple that they'll use in probably every puzzle.
So it's almost like it's a, if you start doing it, you get better at doing that. And I don't know that that's a life, like, you know what I mean? I don't know that my, like I have a new life skill.
I've not gained any new knowledge.
I'm just getting better at doing the New York Times crossword puzzle because I know that like, they love the word epe, and there's a decent chance that the word epe might be in the New York Times crossword puzzle.
They also love air, E-R-R, mm-hmm. and air, E-R-E. And air, E-R-E is always like palindromic poetry, whatever.
Yes.
You get that. They, and like, okay, I
they
got
love
it.
That. They love apps, APSE, mm-hmm. which is like a recessed area in a church that I know now from.
So which, like, I'm realizing is just them trying to get a bunch of vowels.
No, because like you two are very smart. And I guess this is like fun for smart people. Like, ooh, I want to feel a little challenged. I want to feel a little like I might not know things a little bit. Some of us just walk around all the time like that. Like, that's just like, I don't know. My freezer's working right now. My refrigerator's not. This is my current crossword puzzle. Like, this, I know this doesn't, some, this one part is the same part. One part work, one part doesn't work. Why one part work, one part not work? And that's been me for 2 days. So I don't need a crossword puzzle. I'm just stupid. No, life is hard.
You're not stupid. Here's the thing, oh, don't. Kay. No, Taylor, you are not stupid.
I am not like Justin in that I will complete it every day. If you look at my history on my little app, it's embarrassing because they're all half completed because I'll go through and I'll do all the ones I know immediately or can figure out based off the ones I know immediately, like filling in blanks. After that, if I can't easily figure out the rest of them, that crossword is done, in my opinion. All half done.
I think it's fun sometimes, but I will
say, like, Monday ones, because those are easiest.
Yeah, the Monday ones. Monday is easiest, Saturday is hardest. Not Sunday.
Not Sunday?
No, Sunday is biggest, Saturday is hardest.
Oh.
Monday's
easiest.
Those are almost so easy that you're like, I'm a genius, but
that's,
no, they're just,
that's
they're
why
really
I love
easy.
Doing
yeah.
them.
I'm glad no, that it's I something just, that you two enjoy. It's just not my well, idea of fun is reminding myself of my inadequacies.
No, but, the, life but does that is all for I'm getting me. At. That is all I'm getting at. I think if you like it, do it. If you don't like anything. But I don't think being able to do it is a marker of intelligence is what I'm getting at. I think it's like, I used to feel that way about like chess. I thought I was a smart person, but I don't, like, I know so conceptually how to play chess. Like, I understand the rules, but that's it. And I never really wanted to learn more. And the few times I tried to get better at it, I got really frustrated. And it made me feel like, well, I guess I'm not actually a smart person. Because if I'm actually a smart person, I would be good at chess. And eventually, especially, like, Justin got really into it for a while. And what we both discovered was, like, no, you can just be good at chess, and like you can be smart and be good at chess, or you can not be smart and be good at chess. You can be a smart person who isn't good at chess or whatever. Like, it just means you're good at chess. I think crossword puzzles from doing them a lot. It doesn't mean I'm smart. It's like you get good at doing a crossword puzzle. And I don't know if that's a life skill that I can use literally anywhere else.
I can't put it on my resume, ever, so really it does nothing for me at this point
in my
life.
If there is a life or death situation where it requires solving a crossword puzzle, I do believe I would be better than the average person now because I've done it a lot. But that's literally the only way that this will ever make me, you know, that like that's the only leg up it will ever give me.
I mean, it brings you joy, so that's enough. I don't know. I don't... Yeah. Like, it's like, what is it, like the quiz nights at bars, like, mm-hmm. those.
I hate those. Oh, I don't know enough trivia for those. I always feel so dumb.
I know. I was invited to one a long time ago, and my teammates would look at me like they'd be a category of, like, music. Like, Taylor, you know about music. You know this one. I'm like, no, I don't. And then I just would feel inadequate about all the things. Like, I'd gone out with a group of people who thought I knew things, and progressively throughout the night, I showed them how little I know about the things that, for whatever reason, they presumed I knew about. And that just made me feel terrible.
I will agree with you that as much as, like, I can enjoy trivia kind of things, I find those sort of social trivia situations very stressful because if you are someone who they assume has a specific body of knowledge, like Taylor, music or like art may be something people assume you would know about. For me, it's usually medicine or science, right? People assume, well, if the question is anything science, Sydney knows it. And first of all, I have a medical degree. That's like a tiny little piece of science. There's a whole lot of science I don't necessarily know anything extra
about. The
trivia
asks you to diagnose something, you might be able to do that.
Maybe. Well, and then there's another level, which is, and you all, I think you'll understand what I'm saying. If you immerse yourself in a certain field of study, and then you get asked trivia questions that are probably on the more basic level of it, right? Because they're trying to like get a lot of something a lot of people might know. It's hard for your brain sometimes to know, like, well, I have this moment where I'm like, well, it can't be that. That's really obvious. Well, no, that's probably what it is. But like, I think too far and then I'll get it wrong. And does it feel, is there anything that feels worse than being like, I'm the scientist on the team and I miss the science question. And then everybody's looking at me like, are you even good at your job? Why do you, you know? And it's just like, so I understand. I hate those social trivia like stress situations.
I had never been until the campus bar at my law school did trivia, and they give you a they give your team a $50 gift card to said bar if you win. So we were like, we go here so often and they have such a great happy hour. If we get this $50 gift card, we'll be set. Like so many tater tots, so many drinks. We got a team, and of course we're all in law school, so my, you know, knowledge of law and politics or anything does not make me special in this situation. We all have that. So we're all going around like, what do you know about? Like one of us was a history teacher. So like he's got all like the geography and history stuff down. You know, one of us is super, super into music and like knows all this music stuff. And they come to me and they're like, well, you do a pop culture podcast. And I said, yeah, you want to categorize it like that. And they said, so pop culture.
Oh, no, you can't.
Just in general, how do you broaden that out to such a large category? I was like, guys, that means you're expecting me to know this stuff about, like, not just movies and music, but pop culture also includes, like, events that have happened, like, mm-hmm. in celebrities' lives or in, like, the mass, the you know, knowledge, media, whatever, in, like, culture or history. Like,
there are so many TV shows that are just on that people are watching constantly. That I don't know. I don't even know what they're about.
Like everyone, there's always a question about The Good Wife. I don't know what that is. I've never watched it.
I don't know.
But everyone seems to know about it.
I don't know anything about The Good Wife.
Sorry. That's
could any of us answer a question about The Good Wife?
No, it's a show.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
If TikTok isn't surfacing me bits of it, I don't know.
Well, you know, I don't. People that have like a broad range of knowledge about many things, I'm always impressed by, because, like, the things that I care about, I will know too much about, and then most everything else, I know nothing about.
That's also how I am. Yeah. I know very little about things I don't need to know about.
The only shining moment of triumph I've ever had in a trivia setting is there was something about the states and you had to name how many states had something. It was something about letters in them or something like that.
Well, that state song.
I know that state song, so I can sing every state in alphabetical order. And I did that at the table quietly, and we wrote down the states as we went.
I want to imagine how you must have looked right there.
The rest of my
mumbling cool. that to yourself.
The rest of my team looked at me in just awe. You know every state, and you know every state in alphabetical order. I think most people would say, like, well, I can name every state, but like, would it take you some time? No. It takes me no time. It takes me exactly the amount of time I have to sing the song.
See, I thought everyone had to memorize that state song. I just assume that's something that everyone did in their elementary school.
Apparently everyone does not know. There are people out there who are listening who are like, I know the state song. I know some of you do. But like, not everyone knows the state song. So it is a special skill you have.
You didn't learn state song, Ted?
No, I definitely learned it. I forgot it. That's gone. Oh. It was there. And now I moved that out. I said, don't need you anymore. I need to have this trivia about Gundam Wing in my head.
It's one of those things choices that... in life. Like, should not still be taking up space in my brain. And when I'm in the middle of an exam or something where I need actual information, it pops up and I'm like, well, why are you here? I didn't mean to keep room for you. You should have left so I could make room for something else. And it just hangs on. I don't know.
See, I went to a Sailor Moon trivia night once, which was, I would have thought would be my time to shine.
Yeah.
And it was also a frustrating experience because they asked... who sang what famous celebrity sang My Only Love? And I was like, no. There was a weird rumor that it was Jennifer Love Hewitt, but it wasn't. Jennifer Love Hewitt never sang that song. And the answer was Jennifer Love Hewitt. It was wrong. And I was so mad that the question was not researched. I was like, because I wrote down Music Kitchen, which is the band that's attributed on the website. Jennifer Sehe, I think, is the singer, but they operated under the group Music Kitchen at the time of the recording.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I wrote down. And then the point went to the team that said Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I was angry. And my friend was like, just be cool. We're all having fun. And I'm like, I'm no longer having fun.
See, this is the small fatal flaw. That would have done me in for the night, too. That's, I would have been just
but they're
no
wrong.
Fun for the rest of the night.
Can you imagine going up there and trying to explain to the trivia master, like, excuse me, that's actually a popular myth there, sir.
It's fairly, in fact, I think if you search Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sailor Moon, the first thing fact that will come up is the fact that she did not have anything to do with it.
I have a phone. I could help us debunk this myth right here if you'd like.
Just a simple Google search.
That's just not, no, I don't, just nothing about this, it's fun. None of this.
The best was when we went to a drag brunch and they do a drag trivia as well at the same place in the evenings. And they like told us about it at the end of the drag brunch, and the only queer people in this group of friends are me and one other girl. And they looked at us and they were like, oh, well, you all should go. And we were like, well, if we go, like, we can all go, you know, like we all did trivia once before. The two of us are not enough to form a standalone trivia team. They're like, well, but it's not for us.
Really?
And I'm like, well, we're at drag brunch, guys. Like, what? Do you think it's all going to be about like gay stuff? Like, what do you think? We didn't go.
I would have loved to know what the questions were.
I know.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do they think the questions?
I don't know. I think it's just trivia, like at a bar, but it's hosted by drag queens.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah, I think that's all it is.
like there's drag bingo, and I think it's just bingo. I don't think it's like.
No.
That's just numbers. It's all gay numbers.
Yeah. What would a gay bingo be?
What's the gayest number? Let me think.
What is the gayest number?
I don't know. I feel like three's. Why does three feel gay? He's just like a weebly little guy. Oh, a three. Just a little three.
Is three a gay number?
Three sounds gay. I don't know.
I think because out of the first 10, it's like the most fanciful.
Yeah,
that
right?
Schoolhouse Rock song.
Yeah, three is a magic number.
It's the gayest.
Oh, see, they knew. They knew. I was right. Could have gotten that question right. What's the gayest number? Three, obviously.
We've now spent 18 minutes talking about
so sorry.
Gay numbers.
We gotta talk about Scream.
Yes, that is one thing I could answer questions about in trivia, I think.
Scream.
Is Scream.
Which, six? Is that what we just watched?
Yes.
Yeah. Taylor, where in New York City is the shrine to the Scream killers?
I found myself asking where in New York City this entire film was, other than the subway scenes.
I recognize the subway.
Yeah. Can I ask you right off the bat, because I got to know, how realistic is it that on a subway car full of people, someone could, and I should say before we get into this is Scream, so it is a movie about violence and gore and, you know.
It's murder. Just the next chapter in murder. Teenagers getting stabbed.
Yeah,
and,
so there is just, there will be, we will talk about stabbings. How realistic is it that someone would get stabbed in the back of a subway car and no one would even bat an eye?
The answer I'm supposed to give is like, oh, yeah, that could happen. But, like, no, I feel like that, because the specific setup for it is the subway car's lights keep going out, and they seem to all be acting like this is a normal thing. That's not. Like, there are certain trains where sometimes the lights will flicker. It is a rare occurrence. It's not like a...
Because that's probably a pretty big safety hazard if the lights are out for a, you know,
that's,
prolonged period of time.
Yeah,
it's a nice cinematic setup, but that is not as not accurate.
Now, it seemed to be Halloween.
I assume so, based on how many people were just walking around in stab costumes.
Yeah, for the movie's purposes, I think it was. But I think actually New York City, that is one thing I will say. The amount of people just walking around in costume on any given day, and you're wonder where they're going. I don't know.
I mean, I assumed, I don't feel like it was referenced that it was Halloween, but they were at Halloween.
I didn't think it was too.
I mean, they were at costume parties and stuff, so it was Halloween, but I don't feel like, do you know what I mean?
That's what I think. It started at a Halloween party.
Yes.
On a nighttime at the beginning of the movie. And then we assume it continues for several days, the events of this film. I don't think it all happens in one day. But by the end is when you see everyone still in costume. And it's like, dude, I mean, if it's a week-long Halloween, I guess that makes sense. Unless it does all happen in the course of like 2 days.
Yeah, because I don't know, because they do. Now that you say that, like, it does start and you definitely get the vibe that it's Halloween. And then they have like
that party.
They have the news story about like everybody's buying the scream mask again, or the stab mask, whatever they call it. Look, because I think that trope, and that was sort of always the scream thing, is like if there was a serial killer, yes, people would be scared, but also mainly people would just be dumb about it and think it was funny and awesome and make jokes and wear the costume. Like that was always like, and it's a very 90s sort of motif, like it's the media. They think they're glorifying all this blood and violence and everybody makes a joke out of it and nobody really cares because life means nothing because it's the 90s. And like, I feel like that vibe is kind of gone.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, because the Scream movies, there's been six, but the first one came out in what? 90.
I don't know.
90 something.
That's going to make me feel old 96. As soon as you say it.
The first one came out in 96.
You know, when I was 13 years old.
Yeah. But that means there were long gaps, I think, between, I think it was 1 through 4 all happened in like decent succession, maybe 1 through 3.
Yeah.
And then the most recent 2 or 3 have all happened. The most recent 2 have just been in the past year. Like 5 came out last year and 6 just came out this year. Like very quick. There's a big gap in like the culture in the Scream movies. And I will say, I don't think it's... I know what you're saying. And I thought that when watching the original ones. But now, like all the stuff that happened after the Dahmer series came out on Netflix. And like the people that were wearing Dahmer costumes for Halloween and stuff like that, like, I mean, true crime is like at its peak and we love talking about people that have gone through horrible things and done horrible things,
you know.
They might be exaggerating it a bit in terms of like, you know, how many people are really into doing that. But is that Charlie's group message calling on your phone? Sorry. Yeah, that was really funny. Cindy got a call from a group that said best friends.
It's not my best friends. I don't have a group on kids.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't have a group on Kids Messenger called Best Friends. I get, anytime she gets messages or calls on Kids Messenger, they also come through on my phone. Sorry.
No, they exaggerate it for the purposes of a movie. But I do think the idea that as a culture, we just like making icons and like legends out of horrible things isn't totally far-fetched.
That's okay. As you say that, I agree. That is a good point. I feel like it did shift, especially with all like the murder shows and murder podcasts and stuff. I'm not calling out other podcasts, but I do think it's a way
I do listen to those. Ooh. So like, you know, yeah.
I'm not trying to call out murder podcasts.
Podcast beef.
We do a very different kind of show.
Good podcast for starting beef.
I think that it is kind of a way of trying to like intellectualize or justify that same sort of gory fascination that like they're talking about it in a very like raw, visceral way in the early Scream movies. But you're right. That's what we do now, except we try to make it like highbrow.
Yeah.
As if it's not just like humans we're animals, and so like the actions of other animals fascinate us.
Yeah.
And even if they're really horrible and we're horrified by them and we're repulsed by them and it's awful, you stop and look at a car wreck.
Yeah.
Like that's what it is.
Well, like it's funny because I remember people when the Dahmer show came out, people talking about like, don't make this a Halloween costume. I'm sure both, if I saw someone dressed up as Jeffrey Dahmer for Halloween, I would be disgusted. But I'm also sure that I will see people dressed up as Jeffrey Dahmer for Halloween this year based on that show.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And I don't know why they decided to revive the series when they did. Because, I mean, there was also this Scream TV series that happened somewhere in the interim. So, like, it never, like, stopped. There was a clear pause, though, between them making films. And now they're making them, like, crazy. And maybe that's reflective of the culture we're in. Because you're talking about, you know, how the 90s saw stuff like that. And then there were not Scream movies being made for much of, like, the 2010s. And then into this modern era.
Well, and I actually think, and I don't want to get into this too much because I think this is the ending sort of point of the whole thing. I think I don't know what they're trying to do with the overarching narrative with this new reboot, but if the direction they're going is what I think they're trying to do, I actually think it's a really interesting current commentary on the way we think about bad people, quote unquote, bad people versus good people, and what makes someone do terrible things, and can we forgive or understand or relate to people who do terrible things. I actually think they might be saying something really interesting and thoughtful, but I also think you're limited in how you can do that in the format of a Scream movie.
Yeah.
You know, because it's still like we have to have a bunch of kind of cool teens. Which they did update. I mean, I'm an old person, but from my standpoint, I feel like these are today's cool teens they had there. I mean, they're early college students, but, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool now. Like, those would be cool people you'd want to, like, hang out with. And show, other than the murder part, like, you'd want to hang with these people.
Yeah. And I think they're actually as close to teenagers as, you know, any actors are. I feel like in the first Scream movie, it's like, there's no way these kids are really in high school. But, I mean, Jenna Ortega is, like, 20.
So you've 21. Got you've got people who seem genuinely cool, just like in the original Scream movie. It felt the same to me. Like, I wanted to hang out with these cool kids. When Randy would go on his initial rants about scary movies, I was like, yep, that sounds like friends I had.
So I know what you're sitting there wondering. You're thinking to yourself, do I have what it takes to hunt a killer? I mean, that's what we're all wondering all the time. I'm pretty sure. At least I am. I'm about 75% of the time. And that's why today's episode is supported in part by Hunt a Killer, the mystery entertainment company that creates immersive murder mystery games. I can tell you that these are a ton of fun. Justin and I are a big fan of doing these at home as kind of like, you know, we got kids, we can't go out, hang out at the bars and stuff anymore, but we can do a Hunt a Killer game at home, just the two of us, and it's a fun date night. Basically, you get all the evidence, you can examine it, you can eliminate suspects. And the whole thing is immersive and engaging. There are plot twists. You use problem solving and deduction skills together to determine which of this stuff they sent me is relevant, which of these people's statements are telling the truth. And then finally, you figure out the means, the motive, the opportunity. It's a ton of fun. I know Riley loves doing them. They're great for families to do together. They're great for team building events if you wanted to, or even if you just want something that's not a television show to do on your own at home in the evening. This is a great way to spend an evening doing something other than watching TV. So Hunt a Killer, you should definitely check it out. I know everybody in our family enjoys these. We share them with friends. I can't recommend this enough as a great way to spend an evening doing something that'll get your brain working and be a ton of fun. So head over to Hunt a Killer at https://bit.ly/huntakiller_buffering. Got that? huntakiller_buffering. And use buffering for 10% off your order of immersive murder mystery games today. Thank you to Hunt a Killer for sponsoring this episode.
I've wanted to hang out with Matthew Lillard since Scream, and that will continue forever, I think.
Yeah.
Even after you found out that he was one of the killers.
Yeah, I think even more so.
I don't know what to say about that. I never.
Because to me, he didn't have a reason for being a killer other than he was just such a good buddy.
Yeah.
And that.
That's true.
To me, it's like, yeah, I like this guy.
Taylor, you know, let's not dissect that too.
No, let's definitely not. Move on.
I kind of feel bad for him though, because the way they talk, because they go back and they talk about in the Scream movies, because it's so meta the way they do it. Yes. It's hard to follow sometimes. Yeah. But the real murders, the murders that we're seeing happen, are happening in real life, and then a movie franchise is being made in the movie universe called Stab.
Yes.
So the real killers that we know as the real killers from our movies are also the real killers in their movies.
It's a good way to give the current characters a complete encyclopedic knowledge of everything that's happened in the previous movies, because they don't have to know the people they have seen the Stab movies.
Yeah.
And so it helped the characters on screen have the same knowledge that we, the audience, do.
Yeah.
Which allows them, I think that's kind of a little bit of a downfall, though, because I will be completely honest. When Hayden Panettiere showed up and they have that moment where she stands up and it's clear from the camera, from the cut, from the
Where's
shot
Kirby?
That, well, that was clearly what we were all supposed to think. And both Justin and I looked at her and then I went, is that Hayden Panettiere? And he said, yeah, I think so. Was she in a Scream movie? And then she showed the stab wound or the scar. And I was like, oh, she must have been. Who is this? I feel like that they assumed we remembered everything from the Scream movies a lot more than all of us did. Because I'm sitting there going, you're not Neve Campbell. I don't know.
Well, 3 is arguably one of the least discussed and what people usually say is like the worst or one of the worst. And that's what she was in. She was in 3. And that was the last one they made because I looked up to see how close they were, by the way. And it was 1 and 2 were 96 and 97, one after another. 3 was in 2000 and they made 4 out of nowhere in 2011 and then 22 and 23 for 5 and 6. So after 3, it wasn't good enough to make another Scream movie for 11 years.
I did not remember her.
3 was the one where it was on the movie set. I think she was in 4.
Yeah. Oh, I thought she was in 3 where they were on the movie set.
If she was in 4, that would make more sense to me because 2011, that would have gotten lost in my...
She was in 4.
Okay.
Residency years. I probably didn't see that anytime.
Because that's the same one with Emma Roberts as the
You're
surprise
right.
killer.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, when she showed up, I knew the actress and I could understand from her scar that she must have been stabbed previously from a stab from a stabber.
Before that though, I was going to say I feel bad for old Matthew Lillard because everyone says the first Scream killer was Billy Loomis.
He's just forgotten.
It's like, now wait a minute, guys. He had a buddy. They both did the killing.
Who was so supportive that he killed people. You shouldn't do that, but it's Matthew Lillard, and he made it charming.
But can I tell you though that it is not fair? So the two sisters are being stalked again by the Scream killer.
Yeah. Jenna Ortega, Wednesday Adams, is just trying to have a normal teenage life. Well, young adult life. She's in college in New York now, I guess, and like going to parties. But her older sister is like super intense about safety and stuff.
Well, and her older sister carries a dark passenger because she's Billy Loomis's daughter, and so she's struggling with the urge to murder.
She literally sees him everywhere.
Yes. A terrible CGI version.
Is it CGI or is it just him? But, like, it's supposed to look the age that he was in the first movie, but he's...
Yes.
He's still a very handsome man, but he's just much older.
It's him, but they have CGI'd him to make him look the age he was. Mm. Yeah.
Just, I'm sure he's very handsome. Just show him now.
Well, their thinking is probably he died at the age he was in the film.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Well, no, I understand that. But just, you know, like we can... it's weird. It's just weird. Like, I am more focused on how weird it looks than how it's him.
That's why he's always kind of see-through.
Yeah. But, okay, so there... Where were we going?
They're his sisters.
Yes.
She carries a dark passenger. Because Billy Loomis is her father.
Yeah. Sorry, our mother keeps calling.
She knows we're recording a podcast.
She knows we're recording a podcast right now.
She didn't know Billy Loomis was her father until the last movie.
And so, so they're being stalked and they eventually find, with the help of Gail Weathers, who of course has to show up.
Courtney Cox is always up in there.
Gail Weathers shows up and leads them to like, hey, look at this place. It's a shrine to the Scream killer. Look, there's everything from all the old movies, all of the props from, they just dug through the prop room from every set, from every Scream movie and put them in this old abandoned theater. And among them is the TV that killed Matthew Lillard. Except there's the side note. Maybe he didn't die. I forget which character says it. What if it didn't kill him? There are some theories he didn't die. Someone makes that comment.
Maybe if they were going to bring somebody back for the next movie, because I'm sure there'll be a next one.
It's got to be Matthew Lillard.
This was all I could think was, how dare you suggest to me that maybe I'm going to get Matthew Lillard, that maybe that's going to be it, and then don't deliver on that. Don't put that thought in there. Because, I mean, how I'd be rooting for Matthew Lillard at that point. I mean, yeah. I like these two sisters, but I don't know.
Maybe that's where this trilogy is leading, you know? Because it'll be like the Billy Loomis is the dark passenger of the daughter facing off against the... I mean, he seems super dead, to be fair. He seemed super very much dead in that first movie. But... I do think that there's such a renaissance for the first movies. Like, I don't know, TikTok keeps feeding me like super cuts made by like 20-year-olds of Scream 1, and I'm like, this is weird. You guys
like
are
fan kids of Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, but well, you know what? I'm for it. And he was just on, he was also featured in the Boulay Brothers Halfway to Halloween special. So I'm here for this spooky Matthew Lillard revival moment. Put him in the next Scream movie. Bring him back.
Bring him back, only he's not there to kill Sam.
He's there to help her kill.
Oh, he's there to help unlock her dark passenger so he can be the buddy of his best friend's daughter.
Because that's the...
And help her kill.
Or that. That's the thing. Let's do that.
About these movies that I thought we were going to get into more in this one, because they hint at it a lot in the first one. Well,
yes.
I say first one. The first of this trilogy and the fifth one. The first with these characters. That she... does not just kill in self-defense. She does, but at the end of the fifth one, she kills her boyfriend because he ends up, of course, the new guy ends up being one of the Scream killers. So she kills him because he's trying to kill her, but does so in a very, very, very overkill way. And afterwards sees Billy Loomis, and he's like, thumbs up, great job. I know you enjoyed that. No notes. That was great. That's my girl. So we know she, like, enjoys...
And she
killing.
Does it again in this movie when she finally kills, because there's three Scream killers.
Yeah, that was new. I think usually there's been two at most, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember three.
Well, or have there...
There's been one. There's been like a single one. Mm-hmm. And then there's been two. I don't think there's ever been three.
Was, I don't know what to call him because to me he's Russell from New Girl. The dad.
Dermot McDermott. Rooney,
yes.
McDermott, Dylan Rooney. There are two actors. One is named Dylan McDermott, and the other is named Dermot Mulrooney, and he's one of them.
Yes.
Or I may have gotten those names mixed up and turned them into new names.
Dermot Mulrooney. That's
the one he is.
This is this one.
This is no shade on this actor. He's a very handsome older man.
Yeah.
So, he's always been. I feel like he's always been that. Like, I've always looked at him and thought, oh, what a distinguished older gentleman. I think he's very handsome.
But is he ever behind the mask? Is he ever actually doing the killing? Or is he the whole time staying who he is and letting his two kids do it to, like, continue the ruse? You know what I mean? I don't know. Did they make that clear?
No.
I don't know which one of them killed, like, that. Both of them killed different people throughout the...
Because we think the one is dead.
Yeah.
One girl gets killed big time. Which then we're supposed to believe that they... did they kill a random person and replace her body with...
Well, because the dad...
You know what I mean?
The dad's he's a detective.
He's a cop.
Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah.
He can pull that stuff.
Yeah.
So he just brought a random girl in.
And replaced... his daughter's body with this other girl.
That's a weird, like, I don't know, in the past the killers, they've always had some sort of relationship to, like, previous characters for the most part, but this is a little bit more direct when it's like, this is the family of the last killer that this girl murdered seeking revenge, and it's the whole family doing it together. It makes it a little not too real, but a little bit too emotionally resonant to be like, oh, it's not just... It's a little less goofy than I want it to be.
Especially because in that whole last scene, of course it takes place in the Scream Museum, and of course they use all of the previous Scream props and costumes for their series of murders. They're showing a movie, a home movie, that the killer from the last movie made, talking about, like, his dad's talking about how he wanted to be a filmmaker, and he had all these dreams and all these goals, and look at what he did, and he was so talented, and... I saw the pictures of what you did to him or whatever. Like, I know you didn't just kill him in self-defense. I saw what you did to him. It's like, dang, this is more emotionally charged than usually these Scream monologues are. Because the one girl, the one who's the scary movie expert, whose name I can't think of now. She's also in Yellow Jackets. Mindy.
Mindy,
she says she missed the monologue, because there's always the monologue.
Yeah.
But it's a very emotional monologue.
It is. It is. And I think that that was rough. I think they try to downplay it by, like, the idea of the family wanting to take revenge on the person who killed his son, killed their brother, even though, like, he was a killer, too.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that they would want to take revenge is not that out of the realm of, like, oh, okay, well, you can see where they would feel that way. But then the idea that they would do it in a way where they, like, terrorize and murder others and, you know, like, plot and scheme. And I mean, you know, that I think that's how we take it out of the realm of they don't just come after her with a gun.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's well, I mean, the movie, I think we should mention, also opens up with there's a whole other set of scream killers that are ready to stalk the sisters. And then this family wipes them out. Because they're just people lining up in ghost masks to kill these two sisters, which is kind of disgusting.
Samara Weaving was the perfect first celebrity victim, because they still keep going with that trope. But there are two guys who planned on killing the sister specifically to finish the movie or whatever. And they both get killed.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, focusing less on here are the good guys and here are the bad guys and the good guys always win, it's maybe trying to question the cycle of violence. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we went quite that deep, but I think that's a bigger theme in the Scream movies.
Well, and the way they end it, I have to imagine that is what... I assume they're making another in this series because of these characters. But the way they end it very much seems like it will be the older sister, whose name... Is that Sam?
Sam.
Is she the older one? Yeah. Fighting Billy Loomis, telling her to kill more people.
Well, and I think that's what I was going to say is I think what could be interesting, and I don't know, again, because it is a screen, they're Scream movies, and so they have to be kind of campy and, you know, like they can't lean too hard into the drama. I do wonder if what they're trying to do is we have taken these last two movies, we've taken this journey with this older sister who it's not her fault that her dad was a murderer, you know, like you don't get to choose whose DNA you have. It's not her fault that because of that, she was probably raised in a pretty messed up situation. It sounds like her mom has a lot of issues and wasn't necessarily emotionally supportive or there for her. And because her mom had her own stuff she was dealing with. And like, you can imagine that her whole life has been sort of shaped by this thing that was not her fault and out of her control. We've watched her do nothing but try to survive and protect her little sister for the last two movies.
Who she didn't know, which I had forgotten. She didn't have a relationship with her, really know her at all at the beginning of the last movie.
Yes.
I guess the age gap, she left the house as soon as she turned like 18. And Jenna Ortega, I don't know her character name, was still very young.
And if they take that into this last movie or even further, into a point where she becomes the Ghostface killer... because of all this, you will have an audience who loves her and cares about her and is empathizing with her and rooting for her, who suddenly has to accept that also she's about to do terrible things.
Which show her putting on Billy Loomis's mask specifically to kill the Scream killer. She doesn't just like, oh, I got to pull out a knife and like get rid of these people. She like puts on a costume.
Yes. She becomes Ghostface to kill the killer. So again, like right now it's all justifiable. And so we're still on her side. But I think they could do something really interesting to say exactly that about the cycle of violence and about what trauma does to a person and about how like if you saw them on their entire journey until that moment where they do something horrible, maybe you understand why they do the horrible thing. And then at that point, maybe you empathize with them. And then where are you? I mean, like that's not a comfortable place to put your audience, but that's a really...
Well, and they tried to do that with Billy Loomis, I think, in one movie.
For a Scream movie.
Yeah. They gave Billy Loomis a somewhat empathetic background.
Yes.
Like, they tried to give you that sense by the end of it, like, oh, well, maybe we should feel bad for him.
But it's
also all in one movie, and it's just kind of, you don't find out about all that until after he's done all these things.
It's different when you experience it along with the character.
Yeah.
You know? And then, because, like, right now, do you think any of the murders she has done are like unjustified?
No, because I guess she's only killed scream killers, stab killers,
so like
face killers.
So like right now, even though like it's clear she kind of likes it,
every time she does it, she sees her dad just pop up like, "Good job, girl, proud of you."
When she doesn't just like murder, I mean, she doesn't just like stop them. She, you know,
very, very much murders them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's funny because this kind of loops back around. I mean, you're talking about like the true life, like serial killer stories where they always start off with telling you about the serial killer's background. And I feel like that's the thing that kind of made me just, I stopped listening to that kind of stuff because I do think explanations for how somebody gets some way matter, that people aren't just monsters and sometimes people are just, like either everybody has reasons, but there's never an excuse for
that doesn't negate all the things they did.
Yeah, but it is. Yeah. It's like we're empathetic creatures. It's natural that if you understand somebody's motives for something, it's a lot harder to see a moral line to right or wrong. So,
that's the next part of that conversation, which I do think you're right, Tay. It's important to get to, which is like understanding that people aren't just like black and white, bad and good. You know, it's that simple. That there's a lot of gray in there and there's a lot of reasons that lead people to take all the actions they've taken. Like all of that is really important. But then the next step in that conversation is, but it doesn't justify it, because while something might not be your fault, if you carry this baggage with you, it is your responsibility.
Yeah.
How you handle it, how you manage it, how you get help for it does become your responsibility.
Yeah. Well, I think for every story you hear of somebody that was put up, like had to deal with horrible things in like childhood or whatever, and thus that's the reason they became that's the justification for the things they did, there's probably 1,000 people that had the same circumstances in their youth and did not become like that, like the
Ghostface killers.
Yeah
I don't know, like that's what it's like. I know it's easy to be like, well, look at the background, look at the sad background. It's like, how many people do you think walk around with a sad background and they're not murdering people?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Most of us, I'd say.
Yeah. I am excited to see what they do. Because, of course, they always start with like the media coverage of what we just saw in the last one to kind of remind you. And this one, everyone thought she was already the Ghostface killer. They thought she did the last ones and she had framed her ex. And now I assume it will go into the next one saying she did all of these because, I mean, she did kill all those people in that theater.
Yeah.
Her and her sister, I guess. But I assume it will continue the conspiracy online that she did all of them. And then at that point, is she like, well, F it. They all think I did it anyways. You know?
I mean, eventually. Yeah, I think that's, I don't know.
Yeah, I like how they brought in like message boards and Reddit as a source of evil. Like, this is how the killers spread the rumors that the sisters were murderous, was like, you know, through this.
Yep.
It's gonna sound bad. The one thing that didn't happen in this movie that usually does, especially in the last one, because we lost Dewey, usually they'll kill off someone and actually kill off someone that you're like, I can't believe they did that, because they make a point of saying like, no rules, anyone can die. And they do that in this movie. She says anyone could die, even the main characters. I don't think anyone, except for the Ghostface killers and then the guys at the beginning, actually...
The girlfriend.
Dies.
She's new to the friend group, but the Mindy's girlfriend.
Oh, that was sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the only one.
Yeah.
Like, Mindy gets stabbed. She's okay. Gail Weathers gets shot. She's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We think frat boy...
Chad.
Boyfriend. Yeah, Chad is going to die. Miraculously, he's okay.
Yeah, people really survive some stuff in this one.
Yeah.
Hayden Panettiere went. It's okay. Yeah.
Well.
We'll see. I assume they're going to make a seventh one. I don't know.
Because I guess, I feel like this is operating as a new trilogy. Like, four kind of stands alone as its weird thing. And then there's going to be another one to wrap this one up.
I think you're right.
And no Neve Campbell, though.
You never know. Well, they didn't
pay
her enough for the last one, right?
Although, you know, the way that Gail Weathers was like, she deserves her happy ending. I felt like that was her way of looking through the camera, like, she's not in the movie, guys.
Leave her alone.
She's not in the movie.
Yeah.
And then Hayden Panettiere being like,
I'm back.
If you ever need me, I'm here. And it's like, oh, okay, you're Sydney now. I gotcha.
Yeah, I got that vibe. Like, this is where the writers went, oh, no, we need, like, the second act, like, old school character to show up, but it can't be Neve Campbell. What can we do? All right, we got it.
I can't believe they brought someone from Scream 4 for that.
But can I say how much I didn't realize how much the Dewey music had worked its way into my brain, that when Courtney Cox is having that. She's having a conversation with the one of the sisters about like people that you just have to like find like a person and like. I don't know. It was like clearly she was talking about Dewey, and they just play the sting of his music in the background. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wasn't ready for that.
Because they showed his little part of the Scream Museum with like his little drawing of him and his badge or whatever. I don't know. That got me.
Yeah. That got me too.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for watching this new Scream movie and talking about it with me. I assume there will be another one probably in the next year for us to talk about. So
bringing back Matthew Lillard. Manifest it.
Oh, imagine.
We can hope.
Putting out there right now.
Or can he have a child that nobody knew about, and then maybe they team up and become murder buddies with the spirits of their dead fathers? I don't care.
She goes and finds, I want it to be another girl. I want it to be two women.
Yeah.
And she goes and finds Sam, and they're the new Billy Loomis. And what was his character's name?
And then
Stu.
And they're the new duo.
And then I think Jenna Ortega is going to have to stop them, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's the final girl.
Yeah.
Well.
Make it happen, Hollywood.
Yeah. This is what we want. This is what the people want.
Free pitch.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you all. Sydney, what is next?
Next, I was hoping you all would watch a few episodes of Scrubs to talk to me about.
I will do it.
It's out there somewhere. I don't know where I'm watching it. I found it and started to rewatch not too long ago.
I think it's on Hulu.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you. So the new Scream movie was enjoyable.
Thank you, Scream.
I liked it. Thank you, Scream. Or Stab, whatever you are. Yeah. It's hard to tell now. If you do decide to watch the new Scream movie, it is very much like the other Scream movies, as we've already said, in that there's lots of stabbing and blood and it's
violence.
Intense. And it's very violent. So,
yeah.
Just, you know, if you don't mind that sort of thing. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you to Maximum Fun. You should go to MaximumFun.org and check out all the great shows there. You can tweet at us at StillBuff. You can email us at StillBuff@MaximumFun.org. And thank you to the Novellas for our theme song, Baby Change Your Mind.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am Still Buffering.
And I am
too. Next time we visit you, Tay, can we find the screen, the secret screen?
It's not one.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I gotta take you to a new bagel space on my block.
That sounds good to you. Okay. I'll take that.
Hey, you could make the screen museum.
No.
Okay. Trans representation in media is at an all-time high, with trans entertainers gracing the screens large and small.
But trans voices, especially Black trans voices, are rarely centered in our own stories.
That's why we bring you a new limited series called We See Each Other, the podcast, co-hosted by me, journalist and better half of the Max Fun podcast, Fanti, Trayvell Anderson,
and me, award-winning journalist and media personality, Char Jocel.
All of it is based on my book, We See Each Other, a Black trans journey through TV and film.
Now listen, folks, we're having a very different kind of conversation. It's giving kitchen table talk.
Mm-hmm. We get into the discourse, honey. Tune into We See Each Other, the podcast at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get Slayworthy audio.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.